The Super Bowl is just around the corner, and a lot of folks dream of seeing the big game in person. Our guest today is writer and comedian Eric Clemens, who got handcuffed by a park ranger and kicked out of the Super Bowl for unruly behavior.
Listen as we share outrageous stories of getting wasted and kicked out of public places, from the Super Bowl with your dad to a gay leather bar in full monster drag.
Plus, the sequel to Mamma Mia, the movie musical, comes to theaters this summer, with Cher playing a Mae West-inspired, horny grandma.
The Russian government says nyet to the gay couple who thought they found a loophole to Russia's anti-marriage equality laws.
The Guggenheim offers Trump a golden toilet.
And the amazing legacy of cross-dressing artist Marcel Duchamp.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Welcome to Get Out, your favorite new podcast on getting kicked out of places. Today's show is all about getting kicked out of places because you were too outrageous. Bad to the bone. And joining us today is comedian and writer Eric Clemens, who, lucky for us, lives right next door to us.
Hello.
Hi.
And Eric was, we were hanging out this weekend, and he was, I was talking about who you're rooting for the Super Bowl, because, you know, the Super Bowl is coming up. And I always think of the Super Bowl as like our anniversary here at Feast of Fun, because our first podcast we did, we reviewed the commercials of the Super Bowl. And we talked about, we didn't really watch the game, we just watched the commercials. And
because most gay guys, you know, with the exception of the butch ones, like me, I'm just like, I'm like a cat looking at the television. Makes absolutely no sense.
It still doesn't. Yeah. It's about the halftime show and the commercials. And then Eric was like, hey, did I ever tell you about the time I got kicked out of the Super Bowl? I was just like, no.
So for you guys who may have be familiar with our show, Eric was initially on the show to talk about a guy who was stalking him in the men's locker room with his monster cock.
That's right.
But Mark, you disagreed. You didn't think the cock was all that big.
It was pretty big. It was a pretty big cock. It's not the biggest cock I had ever seen, but it was pretty big. I just remember laughing because I was like, he had a really big dick. I'm like, I've seen it. It's not that big. And he's just like, you've seen the same porn I've seen, and you know what a big cock looks like.
That's right.
And you know that's a big cock. I'm like,
that's right.
Yeah, you're right. It's a pretty good size.
It was.
And so you actually got this guy to stop stalking you by appealing to his humanity, and he recognized you as a human being rather than just a piece of hot flesh,
a sex toy.
That's right. I would go to the gym sometimes during the afternoon, and sometimes during the in the morning. And he was all business in the morning, and he was all out and about in the afternoon. So I would see him in the afternoon, and in the morning, and he was all business. And, you know, you're in the locker room. It's just like you and him, and you've seen before. So I asked his name.
Because he liked you.
Yeah, yeah.
He thought you were attractive.
Yeah.
He swelled every time he was around you.
Well,
he
you're did. Straight trade, right? For people who may not be familiar, you identify as heterosexual.
I am. I do.
And you're in a long-term relationship with a woman.
That's correct.
And so that gives a gay guy who's, you know, seeking that kind of experience with straight guys some street cred, right? He knows that you're not likely to have sex with him, which makes it more of a challenge for him.
Sure. I mean, and you know what? I was in a locker room.
Yeah.
And, you know, he may have thought I was gay, and
because you did lick your lips when you were looking at his dick.
Yeah, I licked his lips. I said, you know.
But that's because it was winter and your lips are dry.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he had a big dick. I looked at it and I was just like, wow.
And I think so eventually he left the gym. We don't know if he was.
He was kicked out.
He was kicked out because he was very aggressive with
coming for his monster cock.
Yeah, for coming on to guys. And I guess some guys just really didn't appreciate it. So they said, you know, you've been warned. It's time for you to leave. And so the last time we saw him, Fausto and I were up at the Ravinia for the Dolly Parton concert,
which is an outdoor music festival.
And Fausto was just joking. It's like, it's going to be full of gay men and the bathroom is going to be super cruisy. And lo and behold,
there he was.
Yeah. There he was.
With his dick.
Hanging out in the bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, hey, how you doing? We did a whole podcast about you, hey. And I thought his dick was quite lovely.
It was a good size dick.
I've never actually had an opportunity to lick it or touch it or taste it or hold it. How was it like for you, Eric?
Oh, you know what? It was great. It was soft when it should be, and it was hard when, you know, it should be.
Did it smell like potato chips like our dog's paws does?
It smelled sort of like, I don't know, like a candle.
Now, Eric, you never actually did touch it.
It smelled like maple syrup and pancakes.
He befriended the guy so that he would not be interested in
him. I befriended
him. That's what happened.
You know what? I just befriended him because it's, you know, he obviously has an infatuation or some issue. But at the end of the day, he's a human being. And then so it's just kind of how I like to look at people.
Mm-hmm. And you said, love me as a man.
No, I just said, you know what? I see this guy so much. I'm just going to say hi to him. And I found out his name. I won't say it. And I would see
Let's call him Lenny.
I would see him in the morning.
Lenny.
We'll call him Lenny. Yeah.
That's a funny name.
And I would see him in the morning. I would see him in the morning, you know, in the future after we met. And he was just cool. Mm-hmm. He was just a nice guy. And it's like, that's... And then I would see him
in the
afternoon.
That's the way you want to remember him.
Yeah, you know what? Because I think he probably is a nice guy. He just has these. He just had these urges. I mean, they weren't like, you know, super illegal urges, but they were, you know, urges that other people who are just trying to pay for, you know, a membership don't want to see. Don't want to see his member.
So he got horny.
Horny.
Yes,
urges. I would say that to my girlfriend after the I did the last podcast. So I would go, "Horny."
Yeah,
you really do it.
That's really good.
You do it better than Fausto does.
I think I'm just trying to do Fausto.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get a little horny. You know, James Mansfield does it now too. Mm-hmm. That's like bona fide drag royalty now.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hardy? And that all comes from Tracy Tyler, who used to come on the show and talk about her sex stories. And we're like, that is so funny. It's like, we're all like, horny.
It's so funny.
I was out and about and I didn't realize how horny I was.
I have urges.
So you went to the Super Bowl.
That's correct.
So this is like many years ago.
This was
2002.
Yeah, the 2001 season, 2002 Super Bowl.
Okay, so right after 9/11.
Exactly.
The first Super Bowl after 9/11.
Yeah, that's right.
It was a very serious Super Bowl.
It was a serious Super Bowl.
Bless America.
Paul McCartney, I got to see him for the first time. He did his horrible Freedom song at the beginning, but I got to see Paul McCartney, and then I got to see...
How did that Freedom song go?
I don't know it.
Freedom... Free, you know, and it was just like so 9/11-y, you know. Mm-hmm. And I know he
meant well.
Yeah, Paul McCartney, he's a billionaire, or whatever. So he's not like doing it for the money. He's doing it because he thinks he has you know, a duty to.
He has a responsibility.
His responsibility.
Something to contribute.
Yeah, and,
absolutely.
I love him. I think he's a national world treasure, whatever you want to call it. And. And yeah, but I saw him and yeah, but they kept the house lights on the whole time. So usually if you're up in the nosebleeds like we were, this is in New Orleans pre-Katrina. Usually if you're in the nosebleeds, it's dark and everything's dark in the field and except for the field. But
that way you can see the field.
But the house lights were all on. It was just kind of weird.
Because they were expecting something. They were thinking
they were watching.
Something might happen.
Yeah, they probably had a million cameras watching. Yeah, but it was anyway. Yeah, it was right after 9/11.
That's a fascinating story.
Yeah, sorry. 9/11 always brings the house
where's
down.
Where's the part where you do awful things?
The part where I do awful things. Yeah. Okay. So where should I start? Should I start at...
So you're there with your dad and somebody else, right?
So I'm there with my dad.
And Lenny shows up.
So I'm there with my dad in these seats. And we had been drinking all day.
Because your team is playing.
My team is playing. So
that's the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, so I'm from St. Louis, and I had season tickets, even though I lived up here for my first year up here. I had season tickets, so I won the lottery. And the lottery is just like, hey, you get a chance to buy these, you know, tickets for $500 each. And so I was like, I have to do it. I didn't get a chance to do it when the Rams were there 2 years ago. So I was
Hold
like,
on
yeah.
a second. I don't understand this aspect of the story. In order to go to the Super Bowl, you have to basically play the lottery?
No. If you have season tickets to, so this year it's Philly and New England. Mm-hmm. And if you have season tickets with the Eagles or the Patriots, you are put into a lottery. Sure, you could buy the tickets somewhere else, but you're put into a lottery where you have a chance to buy these tickets. You have a certain amount of time.
At sale.
Yeah, you have a certain amount of time.
At a reduced price.
Not at a reduced price, but you have the chance to just buy them before they're all taken up. So, okay. Yeah. So I had the chance to buy them, and we bought them. Yeah.
So you bought two tickets?
Three? Yeah, two.
Because you were with three people, though, were you not?
I was with a few other people. Okay. Is my mic okay?
No, I keep talking. Is that this is just the cheap equipment here.
We need to replace. Great.
They have to be replaced. Sorry.
So I had season tickets with my dad and two other people. So it was the four of us when we were going to Rams games, St. Louis Rams. So these other two people, along with one or two other people, so it was like six of us all like had dinner together. And then when it was game time, we, you know, split off. And then my dad and I sat down in our seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so what happened?
So if you've ever been to the Superdome, the nosebleeds, it's kind of an old stadium and, everyone's really close together.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, so, you know, like
it's
you're
tight.
Kind of elbow to elbow and, I was really drunk and, you know, everything that the Rams did well, I would stand up and be excited and I'd sit back down and I kept accidentally hitting this guy's, arm on my right. My dad was on my left. And, I would say, sorry to him. Sorry, sorry, sorry. And then eventually, it was the third quarter after U2 played. Third quarter began, and I can't remember what the score was. The Rams made a big play early in the third quarter, and I hit the guy again, and I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. And I don't know. I was probably really drunk at this time. And he was like, he just said something like, you know, fuck you or whatever like that. And I was like, you know what? And I just like stood up, and I was like, and I just said something like, you know, fuck you, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, was he rooting for the opposite team?
No, he was a Rams fan, which is funny.
So because you guys can sit next to everybody. Like, it's not like in a sports team, you know, the people that, like in baseball, isn't it, right?
People, no, you just sit wherever they just assign you.
You sit wherever.
You're not sitting, like, with the team.
No. So I'm not like the players' wives.
So the person who sits next to you could be on the opposite team.
Exactly.
Or rooting for them, and that's where a lot of fights happen.
It's all spattered, you know, it's all, like, sprinkled about, you know, Rams fans, New England fans. Next week it'll be Eagles fans, Patriots fans all over together. Yeah. So it's not like a home field advantage, you know, everyone's just kind of together. Yeah.
And so you yelled at him, you told him to fuck off.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then what happened was I sat down and then, so, you know, on each sides of us, we have these stairs that go up to, you know, where you can go to your seats. And this ranger came up and he was a ranger. He looked like the ranger from like Yogi Bear, if you remember.
Sure.
Yeah.
So he had a ranger hat.
Yeah. Ranger
hat.
Dressed
in brown.
Dressed in brown, light brown, dark brown pants. Filled him out wonderfully. No,
I'm sure he was sexy. Was he sexy?
Yeah, he was just this.
Would I be hot for him?
He was this no nonsense African American man with his
good
thing.
Build.
Good build, but no nonsense.
Okay.
And he
was
just
a tender lover.
Yeah, he just
kisser.
He did one of these things where he just like motioned to me, and so I was like, okay, so I'll be right back, Dad. I have to deal with this. So I went down to him, and then then he said, "Come on down with me." So I've had to follow him down, you know, to the concourse area where you get like, you know, snacks and stuff. And then while I was walking down, I heard this like na 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 na. So I was like, oh, that's
goodbye. So people were chanting.
Yeah, everybody, but a few people.
But it must have been humiliating, right? Or did you not understand at this point in time? You're like getting like, oh, I'm getting kicked out.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, because anytime I was naive. I was a 22-year-old and thinking, and you know, like na na na, hey, goodbye. They see the scenario. Scenario and blah, blah, blah. I was like, hey, fuckers, I'll see you in a second. I go down, and he tells me to face the wall. And so I face the wall, and he puts handcuffs on me.
Oh, and Jesus.
And I'm like, what are you doing? And you have to realize that this isn't just like Soldier Field, Chicago. Like, it took us a while to get down there. And it was a week of being, a few weeks of being excited about the Super Bowl and all this. And we're at the Super Bowl and we're in New Orleans and he's handcuffing me. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like,
does your dad know this is happening?
Yeah. Well, I'll get
not,
to that.
Not at this
I'll
point.
Get to that. It's, I mean, yeah. So So anyway, he handcuffs me and he starts walking me down the concourse. He starts walking me down like as if I'm going, you know, leaving the stadium. I'm like, what's going on? What's going on? He's like, he's just like, shut up. So I'm like, all right. So I'm like, what's going on? Like, what are you, and we went down a little more. I'm like, no, what's going on? What are you doing? What are you doing? You know, I'm like kind of panicking now. Like, you're not going to kick me out of it, are you? And he turns me around. And he goes, you say one word, you're going to jail tonight. And I just said, I just like looked down. I was like, all right, I'm not going to say a thing. I just like totally submissive to him. And then, he takes me all the way down and then he brings me outside, uncuffs me. I'm like, what are you doing? And like starting to yell. And then my dad comes out. I guess my dad was hip to it. And he followed me. And, And then I just said, I was like, you know, yelling. He goes, and then he goes, get him out of here, to my dad. And I go, what is this, some communist country? Like, it was told, like, I said that. I'm not proud of it, but I was like, I said that. And then we're outside of the biggest game that we'd ever been to, you know, the Super Bowl.
Who are they playing?
They're playing the Patriots, okay. And it was Tom Brady's first Super Bowl.
Okay, and so when you left the game, they were ahead? The Rams were ahead?
When I left the game, I believe they were behind something like 14-3 or 14-7 or 14-7, 14-10. They were a little bit behind. So there was a little bit of they need to get going. They need to win, blah, blah, blah. So do you want to keep going?
Keep going. So you and your dad.
So my dad and I were just like, I'm drunk. I'm like, I got to go find the game. I have to go find the game. Because all I was thinking of, all right, we find the game. We watch the game. We find it in a bar. We drink more. They win. We go to Bourbon Street, and it's still like not a lost night. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for a place. Dad's like, "Where are you going?" My dad's like, "Where are you going?" Because you know we don't know where we're going in New Orleans. My dad knows there can be some sketchy areas. I'm like, "I'm looking for a bar," and there was just no bars that we could find around there. And we were walking forever
because you couldn't take a cab. The dome is kind of far away from everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we were just looking for a bar, and my dad, I was just like, leave me the fuck alone. We start getting into a fight. He's like, what? You want to hit me? You want to hit me?
Why are you guys arguing? Because he feels like he blames you for getting kicked out of the.
No. I mean, my dad was kind of just like being, I guess, kind of like just watching me.
He was frustrated.
And I was frustrated, too. And
so your dad says, do you want to hit me?
Yeah.
Why would he say something like that, Eric?
I don't know. I don't know if my dad's seen a lot of, like, I don't know, funny movies, and he thought that was some sort of thing you do. Maybe he wanted to kick my ass, and he wanted a reason for it.
He wanted you to throw the first punch, so he could beat the shit out of you for getting him kicked out of the Super Bowl, too.
Yeah. So, anyway, we finally find this hotel, and we're like, all right, let's go to this hotel and see if they have a fucking TV. So we're in the lobby. We find this TV in the lobby, and it was fuzzy. It was a tube TV. It was fuzzy. I don't know why the New Orleans would have a fuzzy TV when the Super Bowl's right.
New Orleans.
Yeah. So it was a fuzzy TV, and I'm like, what's going on? I can't. And he go, and I look, and I see the New Orleans Patriots, pardon me, the New England Patriots kicker being hoisted by his teammates off the field and celebrating. And I'm like,
oh, so you got to see the end of the game.
Well, I got to see my team lose. And, you know, this is a long time ago, and there's a lot of, like, inner stories within there. But the Rams were favored by, I think, something like 17 or 18 points. At the time, it was the highest spread ever. So if you were betting on the Rams, you had to give the Patriots like 18 points in Vegas.
So it sounds like, you know, hearing you say the story so far, you keep getting away from the emotional element between you and your dad and getting into the focus of the sport, the game, and the points, which really is means that you're still sorting through these emotions right now.
Well,
right? It's hard for you to talk about this.
No. I mean, I don't remember a lot. We had emotion. I mean, it was emotional, but, you know, I had a lot to drink. My dad had a lot to drink. My dad doesn't drink anymore. My dad had a lot to drink, and it was a very, like, pressurized situation.
And the pressure had been brewing over the whole weekend. Like, what happened the day before?
Okay. So me go the day before I'll take you back a little bit.
Okay.
So I'm in Chicago at the time, and my dad and I are supposed to meet at about 6 p.m. in St. Louis to then take a car, and then he's going to pick me up. We're going to take a car to New Orleans.
You're taking the Amtrak.
I take the Amtrak to St. Louis. The Amtrak's 6 hours late. So my dad and I don't leave for New Orleans until midnight Saturday morning. And he drives the whole way down because I was too young. I didn't have the necessary ID to go with the rental car, blah, blah, blah. So he had to drive. So he was on like an hour and a half sleep. And then when we got in,
how many hours is that?
I think about 11.
Okay.
Yeah. So we ended up, and then right when we got there, it was like party time with our friends. And, so we partied the whole day. So anyway, fast forward to that night, my dad is fucked up. He's drinking one of those like Hurricanes, trying to smoke a cigar. He doesn't smoke cigars. And we're on Bourbon Street, and then we're all just fucked up. All my friends are just fucked up. And I say friends, like they're friends, but they're like around my dad's age, maybe a little younger. So we go to this, we're all hungry. We go to this diner, and my dad's just kind of sleeping in the booth. And we all eat, except for my dad. He's sleeping. And it's time for us to leave. My dad gets disoriented when we all get up. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of near like the diner bar area. And he starts kind of making his way towards the kitchen. I go, no, Dad, this way. And friends are helping. And he's just like, no. And he goes towards the kitchen. And then I see this big, cook, dishwasher, whatever, black guy, grab him by the back of his shirt. Then I feel something grab me by the back of my shirt. And I look over and I see one of my dad's friends getting grabbed by the back of his shirt. And we're all getting carried out like babies. My dad carried out of the place. My dad's thrown on the street. His friend is thrown on him. And then
your dad's down on the ground.
My dad's on the ground.
And your friend is thrown on top of your dad.
Yeah.
Like a pancake. Like a pancake house.
And then what?
Then I'm thrown on top of the two of them. And I kind of roll off of them.
This is like the Three Stooges.
I know. Then around us are these people, because it's the Super Bowl weekend. These people are taking pictures of us, laughing, applauding. And, yeah.
Do you wish now you had a photo of that?
Yeah. Then I woke up the next day, and we're all fucked up at this house that we're staying at. It's a friend of a friend. I don't know, but everyone's kind of staying there. My dad's like, you ashamed of me? I'm like, no. I mean, I don't know. I was fucked up too, whatever.
And then that night is the night of the Super Bowl.
And then that night, we did it again. And
so you guys got kicked out of the pancake house before you got kicked out of the Super Bowl.
The night before.
Mm-hmm. And so when you finally saw that you had missed the game and you're basically at a hotel lobby watching it on a fuzzy TV set.
Yeah.
It was a pressure cooker moment.
Yeah, I was pissed.
You finally hit the limit.
I was like pissed, and I was super disappointed.
What did you say to your father at that point?
Well, my dad and I, we found what happened. So he got sick of dealing with me. So he went back to the place we were staying, and then I stayed out.
After the Super Bowl, you stayed out.
Yeah, I stayed out. Yeah. And then my girlfriend like called or something. He's like, yeah, I left Eric. I don't know where he is. She's like, okay, thanks, bye. And
did you ever yell at him like, I wish I was never born? And he turns to you and says, I've been waiting to hear those words my entire life, son.
You know what's funny about my girlfriend at the time was she wanted to go to Mardi Gras, and she wanted to go to Mardi Gras so bad. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, we are college students and we're in Chicago. I don't want to go to a shit show drink fest in New Orleans.
I just did that.
No. Oh. This was like early January. Okay. And then I got those tickets. I'm like, hey, guess who's going to New Orleans?
Yeah, because Mardi Gras happens typically right afterwards,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but she was there like a week before, I think, or a week after. But it was funny because I like totally like said, no, I'm not going to go to New Orleans with you. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to New Orleans for Super Bowl. But anyway, that's another story.
Well, is that like, have you gone to like, you know, parades or like here in Chicago, we have the gay pride parade.
Sure.
That's a very similar environment where it's wall to wall people. Everybody's drunk. People are throwing beads. They're saying, show me your dick, show me your boobs, and all. give you a bead necklace. And that's basically what, you know, New Orleans is. And that the whole tradition comes from there. But your girlfriend was like, I haven't been to that before. I thought it might be fun.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I like to drink. I do like to drink, but I like...
You have four beers in front of you right now.
One of them is mine here.
Yeah.
Three.
Just to let you guys
I've been here for an hour.
I don't want to, you know, clock you, but, you know, no, have had four beers in an hour.
I'm trying to loosen up with you guys. This is a long day.
Do you want a back massage? Do you want me?
No,
do you want me to show you my dick? It's not as big as that guy's.
I need to relax. I need to relax faster. Can you
just shake? Just shake it off.
You know what relaxes me? Looking at penises.
Mark likes to do that a lot, too.
What, look at dicks?
Yeah.
I'm a dick aficionado.
Actually, I don't know if I want to put...
Don't go there. I know what you're thinking, because I was thinking it too, and I don't want... No.
You got.
I have friends who like to look at dicks as a way to relax. Mm-hmm.
So they showed us like a screenshot of
their
phone, and it was like all just like dick pics.
It was like, 100 dick pics.
They're dick pics?
No, other people dick pics.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know,
and so. I was like, you know, if you know what it takes to get you to calm down and, you know, and look in the mirror and say, it's going to be okay, then do it. So, even if it is looking at dick pics or getting kicked out of the Super Bowl or.
Yeah.
Eric, did you learn a lesson? What did you learn? Anything? Is it.
Well, all right. So I have two things to say about that.
Okay.
All right. So first off, I had just started working at the Cheetah Gym. And there was this cute girl who was like my manager. I worked at the juice bar at the time, 2002. I just started working there, and this cute girl, and I told, she goes, how was the Super Bowl? Because I had asked off or whatever. And I said, I was just so disappointed. I got kicked out. And she goes, that's so cool. And I looked at it a different way. I was like, yeah, that is cool. You want to hear? Okay. Any other questions about this? All right. No. So I had two things.
It sounds like you're doing a press conference.
All right.
Here.
No.
No more questions about the Super Bowl.
No. I have one more thing to say about that.
Okay.
And I've never told anyone this before.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I'm so ashamed of it.
Why?
Wow.
I think I'm almost positive. I am positive that when I was yelling at that guy, I called him a faggot.
Oh.
I'll tell you why I wanted to tell you this right now.
Uh-huh.
It's because that's the last time I've ever said that like in any sort of like
angry way.
Cuz
you wanted to hurt a pretty gay gym.
Cuz I just started working at a gay gym, mm-hmm. and I felt like I tell you what. So the Rams, so all that stuff happened. The Rams lost the Super Bowl. All that stuff happened, and the next day I had to ride home with my dad to St. Louis, then to take an Amtrak.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like about a 16, 17 hour like thing I had to do before I got back to Chicago. And that was my main thing that I felt bad about.
Oh.
No, I'm serious. I felt like such a hypocrite. And that's I think that was just like the last of maybe growing up in like a I'm sorry I'm blaming it on how I grew up, but I think you grow up in an environment where that is said
that's
so
an
much.
Insult.
That's an insult, like calling someone a, you know, motherfucker.
I have a good friend from high school that I just saw on Facebook got mad at somebody and called him a faggot.
Is he gay or no?
No.
She typed that.
Huh?
She typed it. Yeah.
Planned it out.
I felt so...
Premeditated hate.
I felt so bad about that more than anything else.
Do you and your dad talk about this experience today? Because that was a while back.
Because we have your dad on the phone.
Yeah, right?
No, I mean, what do you guys get to... Because your father is still around. He's young. He's still healthy. And
he is.
His wits, good set of hair on him.
Good wit. His has wits about it. Do you guys ever bring this up and be like, you know... This is probably not a good way to handle a vacation with your dad.
No, because it really wasn't a vacation. It was just kind of like going down, seeing the game, coming back. And no, over the years, it was work.
It was a work trip to go see a football game.
No. I just mean like it was just sort of like you go down, you do this, you come back. Like, you know, if you guys had a podcast in New York and you're going to be there for 36 hours, mm-hmm. it's not vacation.
Yeah. So you think of seeing a football game as a job?
No. I mean, it was fun. But the thing is, it was an experience. And I think my dad, it's not like something my dad and I my dad and I, we don't talk about or anything. I think it's kind of, we bring it up, and it's a funny thing because it happened 16 years ago. He quit drinking 7 years after. And you know, he's in a better place, and we were in good places back then. It was just one of those things that was that went from shocking to that's kind of a funny story to like whatever.
I would have thought getting thrown out of a diner lumped on top of each other would be like a little bit, let's keep ourselves in check. But you know, so there's something about New Orleans that they call it the town that care forgot for a reason, because people there, they just feel like they can just go to excess and do whatever it is they want.
Yeah,
which is a great thing in some ways. In other ways, you're just like, keep it in check, bud.
Yeah, yeah. I've only been there for that time, okay. And I'd love to go back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, especially during the Super Bowl, during like, you know, just the craziness of it's different. I think being in New Orleans for like Mardi Gras or even for like the Pride Parade, because it's just kind of like you know what you're getting into. Right. But with sports, it's like so like intense, you know, the winner, the loser, blah, blah, blah. And there's just a lot more like pressure around it. Yeah.
Now, Foster was bugging me. He's like, Mark, he's going to tell his story about getting tossed out. I want you to tell a story about you getting tossed out of somewhere, too. And I'm like, I don't think I have one. I don't think I've ever been thrown out of anywhere.
Well, a lot of these, you know, getting kicked out of place stories involve somebody's being drunk. And I know I've seen you come home really, really drunk. Mm-hmm. And I know that most likely you got kicked out of that place. You just weren't aware of it because the staff was like, you know, Mark, it's time to leave now.
And I don't know.
And you're like, oh, you know, you're right.
No, I was always a very pleasant, drunk. I was never an angry drunk. Or rarely was I an angry drunk. It was never like I would get into fights with anybody. Yeah. So, it's like most people like to have me around.
I was kicked. I was kicked out of a concert.
For what?
Drinking underage.
Oh, really?
You know what the funny thing was? This was back in St. Louis. It's an outdoor, like venue. Yeah. The funny thing is when they kicked me out for being underage drinking, I was still, like, 17, 18. I was, like, 17, I think. And they're just like, all right, we're kicking you out. So, yeah, go find your car and go home.
Oh, really?
Well, they didn't say that, but it's kind of like...
You're kicking like a minor out.
You're kicking me out.
Drive drunk?
I drove home. Yeah.
Whoa. And Fausto, you got kicked out of what, the back room of the Eagle?
Well, you know, the Eagle is a leather bar in Chicago that Mark and I met. And at that time, it was the bar that was closest to where I was living, and my sister and I would go there to play the pinball game, The Addams Family.
Oh, cool.
It was one of the greatest pinball games ever. Yeah. You know, it's like da 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 da, and it has like just a wonderful do the mama. What is it? The mamalucha. The
mamushka.
Song, the mamushka. You know, and mamushka. There was like a bonus round, all this stuff. And Mark was standing there, and he looked exactly like this guy that I had been chatting up on the internet with. And so I went up to him and I said, "Hey, have you and I been?" You know, have I met you on the internet? Have we been talking on the internet on AOL, you know? And he was like,
on AOL.
He's like, what the fuck is this shit, girl? No. And, you know, he was really sweet and very kind. And we started making out, and I brought Mark home, and we had a wonderful time.
But that's not when you got kicked out.
No. And so, and Mark, like...
I wish it was.
...won me over, because he was like, said, as soon as we're done with our lovemaking, says, do you like the television show Earth Final Conflict? And I said, oh, marry me, you know.
Really?
And that's pretty much it. And here we are married.
Is that a sci-fi show?
But the early days of this podcast and why we started doing a podcast 14 years ago is because there was no RuPaul's Drag Race on television. Yep. And for drag queens, putting on a show was a really hard thing to do.
Yep.
And so we were, you know, running a blog, just trying to get people interested and excited about the Feast of Fools, Cabaret, Extravaganza, Spectacular. And at that time, a drag queen by the name of Victoria Lamar and I used to hang out a lot and put on the show Feast of Fools at Big Chicks, which is a tavern here in Andersonville.
Wonderful place.
And at the end of the show, the owner, she was just so happy that we had packed the house with about 100 people in this tiny little room. She brought out a bottle of champagne and said, you know, congratulations. And Victoria Lamar and I, before Victoria went, I didn't realize Victoria was in recovery at the time. and so she and I polished off a large bottle of champagne and then a lot of drinks with other people. Now, I was dressed in as a Queen Frostine from the game Candyland. So I was wearing a wedding, a giant wedding dress. And my makeup was made to look like a pretty little princess, you know, with blonde hair and a tiara. Only this princess had rotten teeth because she eats too much candy. Yeah. And she had candy canes and Kit Kat bar, you know, wrappers and Skittles and just any kind of candy that I could find. And I, you know, made it sticky and made it stick all over my dress and my wig. And I looked horrifying, but I smelled fabulous. And Victoria Lamar looked like Victoria Lamar. And she was a very, as we called her, a hard woman. So we were like really drunk and really excited. And we're like, we can do it all wrong. Let's go to the Eagle. So we walked.
Hell yeah.
You could walk from Big Chicks all the way to the Eagle, which was on Clark and Argyle. And we went in there, and the door guy was friends with us, you know. So he was like, yeah, come on in, whatever. You know.
And you were in your dress and
we
all
were
your
in full drag. I was looking like I made some of the contestants from Dragula look tame by comparison.
I wish I was there.
It was horror drag, horror beauty, you know.
That's great.
Rotten teeth, dark circles on my eyes. Glitter, candy stuck on my wig, you know, a really nice tiara. I don't know what happened to that tiara. And so Victoria and I just thought it would be really funny and outrageous to go to the back room where the guys are sucking each other's dicks and just be like, who wants a blowjob?
Did you do it?
I did. We went in there and people are just like looking at us like, what? And then I just feel like the back of my dress and everything. All right, you two. And we're just like dragged out of there.
What did you do?
We just were, you know, causing a ruckus.
Fun of people.
We were causing a ruckus.
They were making a mockery of the leather scene.
Well, because we're, you know, here's these people in a very quiet, intimate space trying to have sex with each other. And here we two people in very loud, outrageous costumes, you know, we're at a 10 and their energy level's at a 2. And we're just like, and we're drunk and we're just screaming and having a fun time. And the one of the bouncers just pulled us out of the bar and just like, get the hell out. And I was just like, I was really shocked and terrified about it. So when I heard about like Violet Tchotchke getting thrown out of that club in France, I understand what that felt like, because you're like, people pay money to come see me in the show. I'm an entertainer. I'm a star. God damn it, you can't talk to me that way. Blah, blah. And then I just realized it's like, you know, I was betraying a trust of people who had made a nonverbal agreement to create a space that was safe for them.
Exactly.
And I was, you know, like a bull in a china shop, you know, smashing their need to have dicks.
Yeah.
And so Victoria Lamar and I, we went back to our apartment and we just, you know, took showers and we had a girls' night at home and we just kikied and laughed about it and stuff. And it's one of my happiest memories of my life because, you know, in some ways we were like bonded together by this experience where we were sort of these outcasts, these misfits in a world that of misfits and outcasts, you know, the leather community certainly is not something that's mainstream, but we're sort of challenging their masculinity and challenging this very serious space with this, you know, very frivolous energy. So, you know, the moral of the story is, you know, you got to find your audience and not, even if you have a great look and a great performance, not everybody's going to appreciate it.
I really like, and I know this goes against, you know, what you were doing that night, but I really like the Eagle was very protective of their people, though. I mean, their people like the scene, you know, they're very protective. Like, no, this isn't a mockery. This is like, these are like...
People they're doing, have a discreet fun time.
They're doing they this, yeah. They're some, doing exactly, you know, and it's like that's respected. It isn't just like chaos back there. Yeah. Like it is, it's chaos in like a certain I don't know.
Well, businesses with certain who laws. Serve alcohol and have people having sex in them is still to this day a very tenuous situation, because these bars can lose their liquor license, and when they do that, it's basically shutting down the business. And so, in a lot of ways, it's an act of courage for a business to allow sexual activity to happen in a place where they serve alcohol. It's an act of rebellion.
Totally.
You know, and I know that a lot of people who listen to the story, they're just like, you know, they frown upon the fact that there are public spaces where men can have sex.
I when I worked at the Cheetah in 2002, 2003, and I love Andersonville. It's like the best place maybe I'll ever live. But I do miss, especially with Man's Country closing, I do miss that like level, that like leather scene, or like seeing people with leather like going south down Clark Street,
right?
And for IML especially,
and it's like, why do I miss that? I just miss that because it made stuff interesting.
It was your neighborhood.
It's like living in East Village doesn't mean that you need to like participate in everything. Living in East Village in like the 80s or late 70s doesn't mean you need to do everything Robert Mapplethorpe's doing. But you can
see it.
But if you see guys walking down the street, like, I live in a really cool neighborhood
for sure.
And I do miss that about the neighborhood.
Well, I guess I could tell this one story because it's like, I thought we would get kicked out. The MCA, which is a, you know, Museum of Contemporary Art here in Chicago, used to have these parties called the Summer Solstice Party. And so at the Summer Solstice, they would be open for 24 hours.
Wow.
And so it was all through the evening. And so tickets, we got there, but the tickets already been sold and it's getting late. Like the bar was going to close because the bar would have to close at 2 o'clock in there. And so we walked around and we thought like, maybe we can get in. And so we saw this wall in the back, and it's, you know, it's a wall that, you know, that's like an, maybe it was Indian style, where like you could actually climb this wall because it had openings in it, right? And so we climbed up over this wall and came into this party. So we're, you know, we're early
from the outside,
you know, 30 something, yeah, from the outside.
You crashed high ritzy party
because
yeah.
it's, you know, it's a building and then it has this courtyard in the back, this building, and then they have this wall, but this wall is easily scalable. And so we go in there, and it's, I don't know, I think there's like five or six of us, right? You know, we're all dudes, and then we go, and we must have known one of the bartenders or something, or we just, I don't know how
you guys
we
found
it.
A room.
I don't know how we did it, but we got like went to a bartender, and we were able to get a bunch of bottles of wine before the bar closed. And for some, we made it all the way up into like the board of directors rooms, and we were just hanging out inside there. And my one friend was kind of tired, so we just kind of like napped for a little bit, and we were just
how many bottles of wine did you have?
We must have had like four or five. I don't know how we got so many bottles.
Are you like
of
around
wine.
Beautiful art?
Yeah, I mean, you could walk around the museum and stuff
Jesus
like that. There's
Christ.
People like there was dancing because it was late night because it was open for 24 hours.
Wow.
And so, you know, we were like, well, let's just go crash around and join the party later. I think maybe I was hoping to get some action from this dude, but I don't think it happened. But I think he was the straight guy of the group. But I do remember like sleeping on the couch with him for a little while. And so we couldn't find bathrooms, right? And so there was some empty bottles, so we just peed in the bottles and left them in the boardroom. And then we went and joined the party. But anyway, years later, this is actually like early last year. I'm on the train and I'm telling this story to somebody, and I left out the urine and the bottles part. And the woman sitting next to me, she goes, "Oh my God, I love that story. I work at the MCA." And then she handed me like some free passes to come. And she just like, and she goes, "We don't have that party anymore precisely because like it would get too wild." But of course, you know, how are you going to police, you know, if you're a museum and you're not used to, you know, having a party that's going for 24 hours, you know, how are you going to police it?
Yeah, you have to have people everywhere.
You know, and it was a fun thing to do, but it's like...
The best museums in cities usually are the modern art museums, you know? And sadly, like, the Guggenheim Museum, I've heard rumors about this in New York City, that for fundraisers, they let... Because the Guggenheim is a corkscrew.
Yeah.
It's a giant, you know, hat, and it's just one giant chute.
That's not Frank Lloyd Wright, is it?
No. I'm not sure who the architect who built the building is, but so you can, and I've heard rumors about this, is that they give somebody a pair of rollerblades
and you can
rollerblade down the whole Guggenheim Museum, and it takes about 15 minutes in the world's most perfect rollerblade experience ever.
Wow. It is Frank Lloyd Wright. You're right.
It's Frank Lloyd Wright.
Thank you.
I guess the Trumps asked the Guggenheim for a Van Gogh.
And Van Gogh.
They told them, no, we're not going to lend you. Because I guess presidents, big museums will lend them certain works of art to have. But they did offer him a golden toilet.
by Italian artist Maurizio Cattelan.
Yeah. Mm.
Which sounds like something, you know, Lady Bunny would say. Be like, you can't have a painting, but you can have a golden toilet to shit in.
You know, they should give him, like, the Jeff Koons, like, Made in Heaven stuff.
That would be amazing.
I think because this happened like around his shithole comment too, so I think that's part of the reason. Because somebody from there like literally like said you could have this if you wanted, but like, well, I'll look into getting you this. But it's actually on display and it's a functioning toilet. People wait in line just to take a dump on it.
I would love to take. I would be so honored if someone gave me a golden toilet to hang in my house. That works. You can remove your own toilet and take a shit in a golden toilet.
Well, especially because like Trump's obsessed with the color gold.
And I'm, the irony is, I think Trump on his airplane or somewhere in one of his apartment buildings or penthouse suites, he actually does have a toilet that's covered in gold.
I'm sure.
Like gold plated or something.
He has like
decorated.
He has like the style sense of someone who just won the lottery.
Yeah, he's a poor man's idea of what
like
a wealthy
everything's
man
gold.
Is.
Like, everything's gold. If you know, the faucets in the bathroom, blah, blah, yeah.
And make a lot of people don't realize that this golden toilet work of art is actually, you know,
homage.
An homage to one of the greatest works of art of all time, the Fountain by Marcel Duchamp, which in 1917... he shocked the New York art world by taking a man's urinal, turning it upside down, and signing with a written signature, R. Mutt, and said, "This is art." And people are like, "Scandal! How can a urinal be?" And then you're passing a urinal as a drinking fountain? And it was like, it was later revealed that actually Marcel Duchamp was bisexual, and probably, you know, in a gay man in a marriage, you know, not to discredit bisexuality, but he was probably a person of doing the best that he could in the limitations of the time.
Sure.
And he was somebody who was always challenging the notions of what art was and what, you know, sexuality was. He was one of the world's most famous drag queens before RuPaul, before around Charlie Chaplin's time. He posed as a photo of himself in drag under the character Rose C'est la vie, which is the name, you know, that's love, you know, C'est la vie, that's life, right? And some of his other most outrageous works of art was L-H-O-O-Q, which is a French pun, Elle chaude au cul, which translates to she's hot in the ass. And that work was a painting of the Mona Lisa with a mustache on it. And people were like, how can you do this to the Mona Lisa? And
it's like Looney Tunes that I saw, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, that same idea. In fact, I think it's a precursor to the Looney Tunes.
Sure, of course, yeah.
So this is a guy who's, like, ahead of his time, you know. He had a painting called The Bride Stripped Bare by her bachelors that was a commentary on the pain and suffering of modern relationships and love and the objectification of women by the institution of marriage. And it was this very, you know, floor-to-ceiling plate of glass with all this sort of abstract imagery, kind of very similar to Salvador Dali, of a woman, you know, being ground to death by these suitors and comparing her to a chocolate grinder. Wow. And so the painting was released in 1915, and then in 1926, the painting broke.
Oh.
And Marcel Duchamp reacted and said, now the painting is finished. And he beautifully put it back together again. And now this painting has this cracked glass. So whenever you see like your cell phone or smartphone, the screen breaks, you can take a picture of the screen broken kind of as an effect and pay tribute to Marcel Duchamp.
That's cool.
And so, you know, the Guggenheim offering Trump a golden toilet may seem kind of a fuck you, but they're actually offering the White House a very, you know, a work of art that has a very powerful and rich legacy.
Yeah, it's the shit.
It's Duchamp that did that?
It's Marcel. Those are all Marcel Duchamp's work, but the golden toilet is Maurizio Cattelan, you know, the next generation of people sort of found object artists.
You know, my girlfriend's reading that new Da Vinci book. It was a new Da Vinci biography.
It's new
Da Vinci. It's like a biography, you know,
of Da Vinci.
And I think she's still getting through it, but she was like, he was a badass. Like, he was openly gay in Florence in like the 1600s, 1500s. I don't know where he's from, but just like being like gay and being okay with that within reason. I mean, it's not like he was, you know,
I think he had to leave Florence, didn't he?
I don't think she's in that chapter yet.
Okay. But I mean, eventually he leaves.
But he was very out and, and very, like, very proud of, his thing.
You know, he was quite a kook. He believed in the idea of what is it? I'm not sure the concept of this, the name of it, is in phase shift sleep, where you're breaking your, you know, most of us sleep at night and maybe take a nap in the middle of the day.
Sure.
He believed in taking, sleeping for like 3 hours a night and then taking like two or three 30-minute naps throughout the day.
Interesting.
And some people who are proponents of it say that it actually can be a very powerful way of living in the sense that it changes your concept of time, but also opens up a lot of time in the day to go about your life and explore and your mind and your intellect and your body.
Yeah.
And at the same time, feel very rested. People who are proponents of the style of sleeping say that it's a, you don't really miss out on much.
Yeah.
You can train your body to get by on limited hours of sleep as long as you're napping effectively throughout the day.
That doesn't sound too kooky to me. It sounds pretty cool.
Well, you have to, your brain's got to shrink at some point in time because that's the whole key to your, like, your rest, right?
Yeah.
And your brain health.
Is that right?
Mark, talk about the two Russian guys who claim the Russian government recognized their same-sex marriage.
So two gay guys, they got married. They were the Russian citizens. They go to Denmark. They get married. And when they come back through, like, the passport thing, they say that, like, their marital status was validated by a member of the staff. Like, you know, there was, like, without superfluous questions, they just kind of like, oh, you're married, and then he just accepted it, right? And so it made the news everywhere throughout the world because people are like, wow, you know, there's a loophole, they got a loophole. And then the Russian government's has stepped in and it's like, about that, they were charged with a deliberate damage to documents. So they're saying, like, so, like, they were going to have some kind of
because
charge
they had modified the documents?
Because they had somehow, somehow those documents had been modified by somebody in the government, and they were somehow in cahoots.
A deliberate damage to documents.
I don't know what's going to happen to them, you know. Who knows if they're going to be sent off to a gulag somewhere. But, I mean, if I were them, you know, good for them for kind of bringing it forward. But the state that they live in right now is just so anti-gay, and, like, you can't even, like, talk about being gay there.
No.
Otherwise, it's like you're advancing homosexuality, and they don't like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even like have like internet hookups unless you know you're going to be put in danger. Possibly.
When you open a lot of those hookup apps, the gay ones, it gives you a warning, like it's subject to persecution and all this stuff. But a lot of young LGBT people still use those apps to find each other. And unfortunately, what I've heard is that also people who are out to harm them use these apps to bait people.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
I'm sure the Trump administration just announced today that they are not imposing new sanctions on Russia, despite the Senate and the House of Representatives almost unanimously 98-2 and the House 419-3 voting to pass Russian sanctions.
But we still have sanctions in place. They're just not adding new ones on top of it, right?
This is breaking news, so I'm not sure if they're lifting them or they're not imposing new ones.
If they were lifting them, that would be huge.
That would be huge.
That'd be horrible news.
Yeah.
So,
and that's part of the reason why Obama put some of those sanctions in there.
Because he knew.
Because he knew, you know, because he already had information is what it's turning out. And he couldn't release it because Mitch McConnell wouldn't sign off on it. Because they're like, this has to be bipartisan. Because if it's just partisan, it'll just be horrible for the election.
We're basically under attack. We've been invaded, not by boots or anything, but we've been invaded through the internet.
Financially.
Financially. And so, you know, in 2018, if you're not voting blue, baby, you're going to be burnt blue or burned. It's that down. And, you know, to me, to see like LGBT people or people who listen to this podcast who for some reason, like we've made a very clear, well-reasoned argument on why you need to vote against Trump and support the Democrats in the next election, regardless of their imperfections. And I'm just always shocked that when I meet or run into people who are just like, I don't like Trump. We should give Trump a break. And I'm like, at what point is what can Trump do if he's not being impeached now, if he's not getting kicked out, what else can he do except basically launch nuclear weapons against his own people?
He's obviously acting like a guilty man when he deals with Russia. Like he will talk about anybody. He will talk about What is it? The
Germany,
yeah,
France,
Germany,
anywhere,
France, but. Of course, the shithole countries. But when it comes to Russia, even if Russia
punches him in the face,
he will say that, you know, the Democrat Hillary made him punch him. You know,
folks are very riled up over the conspiracy theory that Bibi Zaharoubneh on RuPaul's Drag Race is a secret mole. But I'm kind of like, you know, they pretty much spelled it out with that Handmaid's Tale intro and the, you know, surprise everyone, here's Bibi Zaharoubneh. The contestants aren't aware of the Handmaid's Tale context of Bibi and the series, but we as an audience are getting to see it. So if Bibi Zaharoubneh isn't a mole, I'd be shocked.
And she did come in wearing red, right?
She did.
She wore red.
How is she a mole for the show?
So a mole is a spy who goes back to RuPaul, and maybe at the end of the series, or when, you know, when it's very critical, RuPaul will say Bibi gets to decide who stays or who goes home. So it's how kind the contestants are to somebody like Bibi Zaharoubneh, whether they will be, you know, America's Next Drag Superstar.
Got it.
And the
so
Hall
a, mole,
of fame.
A mole for RuPaul. Got it.
Correct. Yeah.
Got it.
And sort of shake things up and not make things as predictable every season, because one of the problems with the show is that it's getting kind of formulaic, you know, and even the contestants kind of anticipate what's going to happen, and so we don't get to see people with their guard down. And that's part of the appeal to a show like RuPaul's Drag Race, is that you get to see these, you know, drag queens who are very concerned with their appearance. They have this kind of polished, you know, appearance and demeanor, and you see that mirror crack.
Sure.
And to see this, you know, either an extraordinary person or a rotten person or a complicated person,
sure,
being revealed, it can be really engaging television.
Of course.
I mean, All Stars 3, next to the two televised sports games, was the highest rated cable show when it aired last Thursday.
That's great.
It's beating everything in the ratings.
Oh, wow.
That's great.
So, you know, I was talking about this with Vivacious yesterday, that I think, you know, we're seeing some drag queens whose acts are very much in line with gymnastics, and I wouldn't be surprised in the near future we'll see something, the equivalent of synchronized swimming, with drag queens and gymnastics dancing. Because, you know, I mean, those death drops and those roundoffs and those flips and those duck walks and all that stuff is really, you know, an athletic event, and
yeah,
so
it's entertainment.
If we have, you know, floor routines and gymnastics, if we have synchronized swimming in the water, why wouldn't we see drag be an Olympic event in the future?
I had a question. RuPaul, what's the pronoun we use for RuPaul?
It.
Really? Is that right?
Ugly.
Is that what RuPaul prefers?
No, he or she, just don't call her late for dinner.
Really?
Yeah.
So I can call
dinner.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was looking
you
up
can
old,
Judy. You can call her Judy.
I was looking up old Divine articles.
Yeah.
Actually, not. I was looking up. I was a Divine article about Man's Country. I was talking about Divine where Man's Country is closing, and Divine.
Man's Country is the gay bathhouse here in town.
The gay bathhouse part.
Just recently closed, and Divine's last public performance was at Man's Country.
That's right, in like 1988.
And then she passed away shortly thereafter.
Like 2 weeks after. Yeah. Heart attack, I believe. And, but when they talked about Divine, it was always he.
Yeah.
So Divine was somebody who had a very complicated relationship with drag, you know, so certainly he was well known by this character that he had created, but in his heart he was an actor and felt very overshadowed by the phenomenon of Divine the drag queen. And so Glenn Harris Milstead's funeral was a very bittersweet moment for a lot of his friends, because they were sort of like, the family was very much making no mention of him as a drag queen.
Interesting.
And, you know, Divine died just the day of they were going to film his appearance on Married with Children.
That's right.
He died in his sleep from sleep apnea. So if you have, like, if you snore really loudly, if you have excess weight, if you smoke a lot of pot, please go see a doctor. Don't let what happened to Divine happen to you. Mamma Mia, the movie with that, you know, based on the Broadway musical, is coming back to theaters. They're making a sequel called Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. It's coming out in July of 2018 with Cher making a special appearance. And I said that Cher's basically playing Mae West, because she has dentures and a blonde wig, and she moves around really stiffly, and she's like singing these songs like Fernando, like.
And I think she's real horny too in it.
And she's horny,
a horny grandma.
Is this? I'm sorry. Is this a musical or a movie?
It's a movie that's
based on a Broadway musical. I know the Broadway musical, but this is a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so it's Mamma Mia. And so like the original Mamma Mia used a lot of the ABBA songs, and so this is actually it's probably reusing some, but also adding different ones into it.
Yeah.
Because there's so
many. Half Breed or
it's Cher songs.
Mamma Mia.
It's all ABBA
Here
songs.
We go again. Yeah, so it stars again Amanda Seyfried, Meryl Streep, Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth. The original cast is back. It's Here We Go Again. Plus Cher, honey, as Mae West. You gotta go see that. It's going to be fantastic. I think actually this is one sequel that's actually going to be better than the original film.
It could only go up. But, you know, the musical about Cher's life is opening up here sometime in June or May or June here in Chicago. So it'll be playing here for about 3 months before, I guess, it hits Broadway.
And I just want to put this out there. Of all the people ask me, who's your dream guest on this podcast? It would be Cher.
Without a doubt.
You guys big Cher fans?
Well, I just think she has a really great personality and a great sense of humor. And I absolutely love her tweets and her, you know, her activism in the women's movement. And just as a person and as an iconic entertainer and as a woman and as a gay icon, I think she would be somebody who would be really great on a podcast. And Cher, if you're listening, come on down to Feast of Fun. You're going to have a good time.
I heard she's really nice.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure
my,
she is.
So this sounds like it's a lot more removed than what it is, but my brother's wife, her sister, works in film and is dating a guy who worked on a movie with Chaz Bono, or worked on a movie directing Chaz. And they got to have dinner at Cher's house. Cher was just wearing sweatpants. She was so cool, so nice. I don't know. Which that makes me happy. You know, it sounds silly,
I'm
right?
She's not a bitch.
But it makes you happy when you're like these icons are like, oh, she's just cool.
Well, being an artist is a very selfish state of being.
Sure.
And for a lot of artists, they're very comfortable in putting ideas, thoughts, themselves out there. But what's really hard for an artist is to give some of that up to somebody else. And so I'm always very leery when we have guests come on the show and they're all like, my dream is to be a talk show host. And I'm just thinking in my head as like, you can't shut up for 5 minutes. I can't shut up for 5 minutes. I'm not an expert on doing this either, but I know how hard it is just to pull back and let the story unfold.
It's hard.
And have, you know, sometimes the guest is not as forthcoming as you'd like for them to be, or you know, like, you know, sometimes a guest is brutally hard to interview, and and your job as an interviewer, as a talk show host, is sometimes to just cajole, to, you know, romance the stone, to get that kind of conversation coming out, which is not always easy. And so for a lot of people whose dream job is to be someone who gives up that attention, they don't really understand why they're artists and performers in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're doing this because we enjoy getting attention. And in some ways, we're made whole when we receive that attention. So it's a very difficult thing to give up, to hand that over to somebody who we may feel isn't deserving of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so for people who are interested in being doing a podcast or doing a talk show or anything like that, my advice is just, you know, go see a therapist first. I'm not kidding. You know, I mean, so something that made me better at this is I took a thing called reflexive counseling, where it was basically the act of just shutting up and looking at a person's eyes and letting them talk as much as they need to.
Yeah.
Without interruption.
Yeah. It's like you have to talk. You have to talk to the person, but then you have to have this thing above you that says, what is the most important thing right now? And just like feed the other person questions. I learned a little bit about that in improv. I learned a lot about that in improv. Stealing focus or giving focus or knowing where the focus is and not trying to steal it for yourself, but giving it to them and letting them have it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the name of the, if you're interested in pursuing this, it's called Reevaluation Counseling.
Interesting.
And there's a lot of you can go to rc.org and learn more about this. warning, it is a bit of a cult. So, you know, approach it with a sense of humor and a flexibility, mm-hmm. and do realize that, like Scientology and all this other stuff, you know, there's good things and there's bad things about mm-hmm. any faith or any practice that's cult-like. You know, yoga can be a cult. You know, Pilates can be a cult. Mm-hmm. Bodybuilding can be a cult, too. So just, you know, understand that I'm not endorsing the cult aspect of RC.
Fausto's lighting candles right now.
So Trump is giving his State of the Union address.
As we speak. Is it tomorrow?
I think it's tomorrow, right?
Yep, Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Yep.
So, oh, it's on Tuesday. And so during his State of the Union address, names of his people who have donated to his campaign will be flashed during the live stream of his thing. So, like, if somebody donated to Trump, they'll have his name there. Could you imagine
online, right?
He's monetizing the State of the Union address.
Yes, he's monetizing the State of the Union address for his campaign. And so could you imagine if, like, Obama or any other president did something like this, the outrage that people would have?
It's unbelievably tacky. It speaks to a man who didn't want to, like, win the White House. He wanted to, like, profit off the White House. Mm-hmm. That's why he's so... I'm not going to say he's cool as a cucumber, but it's like he knows he has a life as soon as, you know, he gets indicted on something and Pence, what's it called?
Becomes president.
Yeah, Pence becomes president. And what did Ford do to Nixon? Pardon him? Mm-hmm.
The
problem with that kind of stuff, you have to acknowledge it. The other thing, too, is with Pence, he can't pardon him for everything. Mm. And so if there's things that Donald Trump has done at a state level, there's nothing they can do. And so some of that, like, money laundering that they're accusing him of, money through that stuff, stuff could be handled through the state.
Sure.
And so Pence wouldn't be able to do anything about that.
Eric Paul Clements, thank you so much for coming on today's Feast of Fun.
Hey, thank you. It's always great. I can't wait till my next time. Yeah. I think this is my fourth time, maybe?
Third or fourth. It was the dick. It was dick follow-up.
Yeah.
And then something...
More dicks.
And then something else about dicks, and now...
I think this is number four.
I think it's number four.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Four in about five and a half years.
Had you signed our guest book?
And I did.
Fausto, would you read what he wrote?
It was really... No, it's really lame. It's
so we've started doing this,
I should have started doing it from the get-go.
That's okay.
I mean, we've had extraordinary guests in the last 14 years we've been doing this podcast. You can listen to a lot of those interviews on our archives, feastoffun.com/plus, where you're becoming a member. You can access these shows.
Such a deal.
And unlimited. Mm-hmm. All you can eat, baby. Eric Clements wrote, love you guys. Let's have a great show. That's all.
It's fine.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, let's whip our dicks out and Monday night.
Mungay
night. Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, that's like, I have nothing to say. I was like, all right, I'll make a thing out of the day.
Well, you know, I'll
be better. Invite me on again and I'll
Well, do you feel like it, you know, I mean, it sounds like you were really still kind of like sorting out the story about getting kicked out of the Super Bowl with your dad.
Well, you know,
it's not an easy story to tell because it sounds like there's unresolved emotions there with your father.
Well, I mean, like, I think with every guy, there's unresolved emotions with their father. But eventually, everyone dies.
Well, that's the thing. It's like,
we all die.
It's harder to mourn a parent where you're not been able to say, you know what, this really hurt me, and I need you to acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I really loved you in this way, and I need you to hear this. Sometimes when we have poor communication, especially with our parents, it's more painful when they pass on.
Yeah.
Because that possibility for that reconciliation, that moment of being acknowledged and heard, is gone.
So I agree.
I urge everybody, you know, if you can, spend some quality time with your mom or your dad or gender nonconforming parental figure.
Yeah.
And tell them how you feel and make them listen to you if you can.
Definitely. I think in the last like 3 or 4 years, especially since my dad hasn't been, you know, drinking or anything, I've made it a point to say, you know, how I feel. And at the end of the day, like, it doesn't matter. I'm not worried about his reaction. I'm just the only thing I'm worried about is not being able to say how I feel. And I think that's important. I think like the worst thing, the most frustrating thing is when a parent doesn't understand you and when a parent doesn't, when you feel like they don't, try to understand you. Mm. So sometimes when you feel like that, sometimes you have to just like, say, this is who I am. This is how I felt 15 years ago when this happened, 20 years ago when this happened. Mm-hmm. And you just have to say it. And this is what it is. And this is how I feel. and it's all good. But you know what? Like, I should have said it 20 years ago, but I was 17, and now I'm going to say it now.
Oh, words to live by, Eric. Thanks.
Yeah.
Bye, everyone.
I want to remind folks we can't do this podcast without your support. So if you're not a Plus member yet, sign up today at feastoffun.com/plus. Thank you for your support.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.